Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? What are the differences in how people homeschool from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome, everyone. Today with us, we have Heather from Minnesota. Heather has a background in early childhood education and also homeschools her kids. So Heather, thank you for being here today with us.
Thank you. Yeah. So I do have a background in early childhood education. I currently have four kids. The youngest is 8 years old and my oldest is 18. So I've been at it for a while, and it's been really cool. I'm really loving this stage that we're in where everybody is really independent.
Well, you said currently, like it might change.
Well, you know, you never know. My oldest is going to be graduating, for one thing. So soon I'll only have three homeschoolers, but, you never know.
Keep us guessing.
Yeah. Right.
Have you always homeschooled, and what made you decide to homeschool your kids?
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of things that go into homeschooling. Interestingly, I did not homeschool all of my kids all the way from the beginning.
You just pick your favorite.
However, my oldest.
That's what I've decided. You just pick your favorite and you homeschool them.
No. I had a reason why I picked one to start with, but my oldest actually asked to be homeschooled from the get-go, like preschool on up. She wanted to be homeschooled, and we did not start homeschooling her until high school.
Wow.
Pretty much when COVID hit, actually, is when we decided to bring her into the homeschool fold.
Okay.
But I have a pretty unique experience, actually, because I also am on the board of directors for one of the largest school districts in our state. You know, as a homeschooling parent, that's a little bit unconventional to make that decision. But there is something in homeschooling that you can't get in public school. And that's one of the main reasons why we do it, is because we have the flexibility. But my second oldest, who is going to be 15 soon, is actually the reason why we started homeschooling. She has complex medical issues, and we started homeschooling her because in the public school setting in our area in elementary school, they don't send home makeup work. So she was missing days and weeks of school and not getting to recuperate that loss of learning that her peers were getting. Yeah. So it didn't take long for her to get behind her peers.
Yeah.
Even just from a self-esteem perspective, even though intellectually she wasn't necessarily behind her peers, feeling like she couldn't do the things that they could do was significantly damaging. And also it was very boring. You know, when you're in the hospital for a week and you don't have anything to do to keep your mind going, you know, it can be really boring. So she's actually the reason we started homeschooling. We brought her home first. We did a year of homeschooling. And at the time that I did that, I had a preschooler who was also home with us, of course, because she wasn't in school yet. That went really well. She did great. She was caught back up with her peers. We sent her back to public school the next year. And then we pulled our third daughter home because she is autistic and she has several learning disabilities. And she was also very behind her peers. And so we thought, you know, it worked to give our other daughter one-on-one time for a year of, you know, individualized education. Let's do that. And we did. And she did really well. We ended up sending her back because she got sort of caught up with her peers. She wasn't, of course, all the way caught up, but she was close enough that it didn't seem like it would be too big of a deal. However, that year, we thought she was doing very well because we were concerned with her academics. You know, regular public school has, you know, school conferences, right? So we would go to the school conferences, and we also scheduled additional conferences because of her disability. She had an IEP, which is a federally mandated individualized education plan. Mm-hmm. So we had IEP conferences, we had regular conferences, and then we scheduled additional conferences with the teacher. And definitely no hate to the teacher. She is a phenomenal woman and a phenomenal teacher. And she has like the best heart for working with kids who have special needs. But she didn't have the resources that she needed to care for and maintain the level of education and rigor for the number of kids that she had in her class that had special needs.
Right.
I believe there were like 8 in her class that had special needs. So our daughter ended up spending a lot of time hiding under her desk because she wasn't causing a ruckus. She wasn't causing trouble. She was keeping to herself. But that meant a whole nother year of no learning. So she got all the way behind her peers again.
Wow.
And when you have difficulty with processing, that gap is it amplifies. So it does become a loss of learning as well.
Right.
Things that you had previously learned, you are no longer in practice. And so you have to relearn. And COVID hit. And so when COVID hit, we actually just said, you know what, we're going to bring everybody home. And it was a couple of months of de-schooling and just being together as a family. That was really pivotal for our family to be able to have that time together and decompress. Right around the time COVID hit, my mother passed away. And that was super hard for the kids. And I mean, for me too, sure. It was obviously super hard for all of us. But to decompress and all the things that were happening in the world, it was very overwhelming. A lot of kids in our community were really struggling, mm-hmm. And mine were very struggling. So we decided we're bringing them home. And ever since, I would say our lives have been changed dramatically by it. The relationships that my daughters, because they're all girls, right? The relationships they have with each other are tremendous. Like I have several siblings and I'm not super close to them, but my girls are going to be best friends for life. And you can tell because they have this connection with each other that you just can't replace. And the more I've researched homeschooling and gotten deeper into the community and what it's all about has really transformed how we operate as a family and the things that we prioritize. It's been really amazing to see them grow and change and mature in these different ways. Things that their counterparts in public school are experiencing, my kids don't really experience, particularly bullying. That's not something that they really have to deal with. If somebody is being unkind to them or treating them poorly, they have the tools to ask that person to change their behavior. And if the person just doesn't want to, they are comfortable saying, okay, well then, you know, let's try again another time.
Remove myself from this relationship. Yeah. And that's
exactly,
it's a really good skill to teach them as life goes on. Okay. I'm going to remove myself from this. I don't have to take this.
Yep, exactly. And academic wise, I teach more a one-room schoolhouse style. So we're all doing the same subjects at the same time, and they're progressing at the level that they can. So one of my daughters is quite advanced in certain areas because she's picking up from her sisters. She's younger, right? And her brain is just absorbing like a sponge. And so she's able to pick up those things really quickly and advance to a higher level. And then another opportunity that has been really incredible for our kids is the opportunity to do post-secondary education, which is college. So college and high school in our state, if you are in 10th grade or higher, the state will pay your tuition to get college credits while you're in high school, regardless of whether you're a homeschool student, private school student, charter school student, public school student.
So this is Minnesota.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's pretty incredible that they can get these college credits and graduate high school in some cases with a 2-3 year degree.
That is amazing. What a savings for them when they get out of school to not have 2 years of tuition to pay and room and board and all that.
Yep.
Wow. All right. We don't have that in New York.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
It's funny because as you were talking, I thought of two different interviews. One I haven't had yet, but one that's coming up with Anna, who is a homeschooled student. And when I met her face to face separately, I had said, what do you like about homeschooling? And she talked about the bond that she had with her siblings and that she would have lifelong friends and she would not have created this bond with them had they all been in school. And I thought of my interview with Katie, where she talked about when you have kids in different grades, there are content-based subject matters and skills-based subject matters. And the content-based, like the geography, social studies, you can teach that family style and you teach it to the oldest, which is what you were saying, yep. You teach it to the oldest child and then the younger ones will pick up as they're mentally capable. And it sounds like that's how your family's doing it and really thriving.
Yeah, it is. It's really beautiful. And, you know, one thing about the family bonding aspect and the relationship aspect, just as even if you have only one child, I really truly believe that that time that you have together is irreplaceable. If you think about it, a school day is similar to a work day. That's a huge amount of time that these children are away from their parents.
Yep.
And they're being influenced by the world around them. And if they're not having good experiences, that's going to significantly impact them further on down the road, right? If they're constantly being bullied and they don't have the tools or the words to ask for support, they're going to continue to suffer with that. And it's going to affect their self-esteem, their academic outcomes. I mean, it really affects everything. But the other aspect of this is, as a school board member, one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing is researching academic outcomes and processes and systems and how to influence education to improve academic outcomes. In our school district, we have what we call the achievement gap or opportunity gap. And that is where specific groups of students will predictably perform at a lower rate than their white peer counterparts, right? And that is a travesty, that is something that could possibly impact them, right? Mm-hmm. But in our research to shore up those achievement gaps, how do we elevate everybody's academic success? We've learned that there is one single greatest indicator of a student's academic success and outcomes and their social and emotional well-being, and that is having an actively involved parent, regardless of where they go to school, regardless of what they want to do for a living, regardless of their intelligence. If they have an involved parent, just one, or an adult of any kind that's involved, their likelihood of having success increases exponentially. And so I think about that a lot when I'm with my children every day, and especially when I'm feeling burned out or touched out and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, you know, that I'm providing them with the skills and the tools and the resources that they need to be successful in life later. And this is just a short window of time that I have with them, but it's the most impactful time of their lives, right?
What a statement.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think about how serious it is. I mean, but we really only have them for 15% of their life.
Right. You think of 18 years versus, you know, hopefully a 90-year life. Yeah. Now, you said kind of a buzzword to me, the social emotional learning. And since you have a background in childhood development and you're on the school board, in the school that if I were to send my kids to public school, their school teaches a social emotional learning course and it's across multiple grades. The only reason I know about it is that I ran into a mom whose child goes there and she has a background in psychology. And she said, I opted for my child to not be in that class. She has to sit in the hallway during social emotional learning. And the course is paid for with a social worker who's funded with COVID funding. So it's very odd how, why is COVID funding paying for this? And what is this course about? And she kind of explained it a little bit to me. But do you have any insight to that? Because you're nodding your head. So lay it on me.
Yeah. So social emotional learning is a huge buzzword in the education community right now. And sadly, it's being used. A lot of people are finding it controversial, I guess. And the question is, how do we define social emotional learning, right? So depending on the definition, depends on whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing for your child, truly. And fundamentally at its core, social emotional learning is teaching a child how to get through the world and experience emotion in a healthy and productive way, to be able to get through their emotions, whether they're good or bad, without causing harm to anybody else or to themselves. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
That's what social emotional learning is.
Good on the outside.
But it's being taken to a whole nother level.
Okay.
You know, I'm seeing it being used almost backwards, I feel like, in some cases, where it's talking about helping children find their identity, mm-hmm. oftentimes talking about the, you know, LGBTQIA plus community and their identity. That's just not appropriate for children. That's a sexual identity, mm-hmm. and a person's sexual identity is not attached to their emotional identity or their spiritual identity or who they are as a person, you know, right? That's just a teeny aspect of who they will become. But we shouldn't be talking to children about what their sexual preferences are.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. That this woman was telling me about her daughter's in kindergarten, and that's why she said, I told her, I don't want her part of the class. She sits in the hall. And I thought, well, geez, now she feels punished. And the rest of the class must look at her as odd because she's now sitting in a hallway for this course. But as a mother who, you know, it has the background in psychology and social work, she knew what to look for. Myself, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't, you know, we don't get the curriculum that's going to be taught, sent home to us over the summer to go through as parents and say, oh, this I like and this I don't. And nor do we feel like we have the option to say, hey, I'm going to opt out for that one for my child. I wouldn't know that I have that option.
Right. And a lot of parents don't actually. Myself and another board member in my school district have been trying to help people in our state understand that in our state, you have the right, the Freedom of Information Act allows you to have access to the curriculum before it is taught.
Wow.
But you have to ask for it, right?
You have
and
to know
a lot of people don't know to ask for it, and they don't know what to ask for.
Exactly.
Right? So that's really the hard part, is knowing what to look for and what's appropriate and what's bad. When you talk about social emotional learning at a high level, it sounds like a good thing.
Sure.
It doesn't sound like it could possibly be harmful, right?
Right.
But it comes down to the core of what matter is actually being taught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we want to teach kids things that are concrete. They need fact-based, concrete information. And at this, especially the young ages, you're talking, you know, preschool, elementary school age, they need the tools to learn how to describe what their feelings are, mm-hmm. and to say, you know, I'm struggling with this. This new concept is hard for me. I don't understand how to do this math. It's confusing for me, whatever it is. They need those types of language skills and communication skills, not to affirm somebody's sexual orientation or to discover what theirs is.
Right.
You know, so that's where it's kind of taking it a step too far. And then also some classes in our school district it's taking a racial stance as well, where it's asking kids to identify how they identify racially. And I personally really struggle with that because when you look at me, you probably see somebody who looks very white, and that's how I look. But I'm also Mexican and I'm also Native American. And so are my children. And most people, unless they are also Mexican and Native American and happen to recognize those features in me, they're not going to know that.
Right.
And they're definitely not going to know that with my kids, who are more mixed than I am. And then they're being told, you know, that they're bad for being a white person, but they're confused because I'm Mexican. I don't understand. This doesn't make sense. Why am I being told this? Or why do I have to deny part of who I am, right? Because part of our ancestry is European, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be just Mexican, mm-hmm. and I don't want to be just European. I am all, mm-hmm. right? And that's really difficult. I don't personally like putting people into those boxes and constructs because, again, it's just a tiny part of how a child identifies. And the way I want my kids to identify isn't by their race, their sex, their sexuality. I want them to identify themselves as lifelong learners, mm-hmm. as brilliant, as capable and strong. And those are the things that I want them to identify themselves with, not with things that are meaningless, you know?
Right.
I want those strong moral traits.
The character, their moral ground. Yeah. Do they help others? That is what we want our kids to,
right,
you know, the values that we want to instill in them, not you should judge someone by, you know, their heritage, their culture, their
exactly.
color, their, you know, ethnicity, anything. Yeah. It's like, and I don't think kids even saw that until it was kind of like pounded in their heads in the last couple of years. You know, there was recently,
I don't think they did.
There was recently a boy who was talking to his school board about, he was going to be leaving the school because on the, you know, on the first day of school, the principal had this whole equity assembly and talked about equity, but how we had to raise up all of the different groups except the white people. So he talked about how horrible that made him feel, and you know, how throughout the year they just kept dismissing him when he was asking these questions about, well, why are you saying this? And how basically at the end he was like, I never saw race before. And all the school did was made me see it all year long and made me feel awkward talking to my friends that were of different races. And it's, I wonder, is it genuine that we're trying to make, you know, everyone, you know, raise up people who may have been disadvantaged? Or is it by design that we're trying to pit people against each other because kind of a divided community right. isn't going to come together and fight back against their oppressor? When they're all bickering, no one's looking at what's really going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Actually, yesterday I heard Dr. Kim Heil, who is an African-American woman. She's a superintendent of schools in Minnesota. And she was talking about one of her experiences where a group of students came to her and they said that they were curious about one another's cultures. Mm-hmm. They wanted to dig in and learn more about their community because their community is extremely diverse. I think I want to say the community is like 85% people of color, Hmong, African American, East Asian, Islander, like lots of different people in this one community, and very few white people, right? Comparatively. And the kids were saying, I want to learn, know more. I'd really like to know more about my friend's culture. I'd like to learn the Hmong language. I'd like to experience a traditional African meal. But they're afraid to engage in those conversations because of the adults in their lives.
Mm.
And it's so devastating because we want children to be curious. We Yes. want them to be engaged. You know, you want to be excited about learning about somebody else's culture and respectful of it. And you might learn that might be your new favorite food or your new favorite kind of music right. or whatever. You know, you might find something that you truly are passionate about. But if we don't allow them to explore that and to get to know their peers on just a person level.
Well, isn't it so telling, too, that they wouldn't do it because they were afraid of what the adults would say and who would get offended? And I mean, so we're going to deny children's curiosity and their ability to learn because we don't want to get sued right. or put in the paper. And that only seems right. to be kind of one way, but it's, I mean, I was yeah. just listening to the Megyn Kelly podcast where she was interviewing a woman yeah. who escaped from North Korea. And I'm sitting there like, I can't even believe this is going on. I mean, when you really hear about what is going on in that country and I mean, the stuff we seem to be fighting about, I don't know if it's the start of, you know, that sort of agenda here or just, I don't know. But the things that we worry about is so minuscule compared to what's going on in other parts of the world. I mean, just when she yeah. was explaining how they're not even taught to say, I love you. That's just like not even part of their culture. They don't say, I love you to their moms, their dads. Family units aren't about love. It's, you know, generally the government will say who right. marries who. And, you know, they don't even know that escaping is a thing. This woman happened to, but what she had to go through and watch her mother chose to get raped in front of her to save her daughter from being raped, because the daughter would have been trafficked for a higher dollar amount being a virgin. And so the mother said, do to me what you have to do, but please don't touch my daughter. So they agreed, okay, we'll keep her a virgin because we'll make more money. And what she had to witness her mother do for her at 13 years old. And this is all in like our lifetime. This is in the last decade. I mean, it's so right. crazy. And, oh, we're not going to teach about cultures because we're afraid of offending a parent or, you know, getting in trouble. It's like just right. mind blowing. And that's the beauty of homeschool, is that we can say, hey, I can say to my kids, hey, I heard this podcast about North Korea. Like, let's see what we can actually really learn about it. And then that in turn will make them realize how beautiful they have it here, how wonderful they have it in this country, and how the values that we have in our country that we really need to preserve and be thankful for.
Absolutely. That actually makes me think of when we talk about history or social studies, in our house, we actually focus on world history versus American history or state-specific history. Okay. They're going to learn a lot about the United States, and they're going to learn a lot about our state and whatever states they choose to live in simply by being a part of those things. Mm-hmm. And the news and all the opportunities that we have to participate in things throughout our country and in our state, they're going to be learning those things. And I don't not teach American history. Mm-hmm. I just don't teach it all encompassing, mm-hmm. right? I spend a significantly larger amount of time on world history. And the reason for that is because America is a small place mm-hmm. compared to the world.
That's right? only been around for 250 years, like such a small peon portion.
Yes. And because we've only been around for such a small portion, the majority of our customs, our laws, our rules, the language that we use is derived from ancient history, right? All of these things came from ancient Rome, from biblical times, from Greece, from China. All of these different things that we have here in America today are created by our ancestors. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, if you want to go back far enough, we're talking about ancient history. We're talking about Egypt. We're talking mm-hmm. about the Middle East. That's where people originated from. That's where our whole country originated from, Europe, right? And you have to know those fundamental core things about wars that happened, mm-hmm. about how societies were built, mm-hmm. about how societies died. You have to know all of those things to understand why we have what we have today. Mm-hmm. Almost every single pop culture film is based off of a historical story.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
Like, they're based off of the stories, the myths, and the legends of the past.
Yeah. And I don't remember learning about any of that in public school. I mean, I know we talked about the Mayans and the Aztecs and the Incas, but I don't remember in what context or...
Right. It's not foundational, right? It's just a unit that you do one time.
Yeah. And I was kind of talking about that with my husband, with like why our 4.5-year-old has an issue learning letters. And then I thought, well, gee, does he know that a letter connects to a sound, and like letters together are sounds together that make a word? And like when he knows those, he can make sentences and read right. from a book. Like, I don't know that it's ever been explained to him. I mean, I told him the next day, but in school, like he's in a preschool right now that he goes to Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for 2.5 hours. And like, they sent home a note saying, you should really all be working with your children with flashcards. And I'm thinking, well, he's probably going, why do I need to know this? And it's the same thing with the Incas and the Mayans. Why do I need to know it? Like, I don't know, you're just telling me a unit here, and when's the test, and what do I need to know for the test?
Exactly. So that's the other aspect of homeschooling. I do not test my kids other than what is legally required. I quiz them throughout the day, throughout the year, throughout the week, like orally, you know, I want to know if they're comprehending.
What is required in Minnesota?
One test per year, one nationally normed standardized test.
So it's not a test you actually give. It is a standardized test.
You can choose which test you administer to your kids. And there's a variety of tests and ways that you can test them. So you can give an auditory test. You can give a written test. You can do it electronically on the computer. You can hire someone else to come in and test your child. I purchase an online version and it gets graded right away and I get the results immediately. And it's super easy for my kids to do, but it's just once a year. And that way they don't have this pressure to perform. They're learning to learn, not to prove to anybody what they can learn. And I don't even care. And I tell my kids this, I literally do not care what you get on the test. Your scores don't matter to me on that particular test. And they've always performed above grade level because I just don't want them to have that pressure of feeling like they need to prove to somebody how much they know and what they know. I want them to be excited about learning. I want them to love learning. I want them to always love learning. So I definitely make that a huge part of our schooling. I do a lot of comprehension checks where I'll just casually have a conversation with them about something to grasp their understanding of it. But I find that that conversation is actually, it's really great because if you put it in a way that says, hey, can you tell me about this? Or I didn't understand that. Could you explain it to me? They're teaching you. And when they're teaching you, they're solidifying their knowledge and understanding.
100%. So I've been trying to do that with my four-year-old with the letters, like saying to him, well, let's read a book to the baby. And when he feels like he's doing some of the teaching, he actually absorbs it better.
That's so true. One thing I found actually really interesting is in our community, our literacy rates have been declining for the last several years. And that's bad, right? We don't want kids to be unable to read. And in researching that and trying to come to understanding about what's the best way to teach reading, we learned that in our school district, a lot of kids were learning what they call balanced literacy and sight words. And that doesn't fundamentally teach phonics or phonemic awareness as its core. And that aspect of learning how to read is critical for most kids. Now we're changing that because we've learned that phonics and phonemic awareness are a crucial component of learning how to read and learning how to decode a language, right? Like you were saying, does he know that this letter has a sound, right? You have to teach children the variety of ways that sounds can be made with letters.
So phonics is pretty much just the relationship of the sound to the letter. And then the phonemic awareness is that like just the sounds of the word, like you're just concentrating on that part.
Letters have a sound attached to them. And most letters have more than one sound. Well, I shouldn't say most. All vowels have more than one sound attached to them. And letters put together have a different sound attached to them, and sometimes more than one sound attached to them. If we don't teach children the sounds to understand phonics and phonemic awareness, they will not be able to decode words that they're unfamiliar with, right? If you teach someone only one way to read a word, they're not going to be able to use that to decode words they haven't read. And so that aspect is also really important to learning how to read and teaching. And that's the difficult thing about public school. You don't know what they're teaching in the classroom. You would just assume they're doing what they should do so that your child is successful. But in homeschool, you get to choose. And if the curriculum is not working, you get to pick a new one.
Right. What ones do you use?
Well, I use the Well-Trained Mind because it is more literature-based and it's also more oral. And my children are more auditory learners. They don't really like to do lots of worksheets. So I try not to, it's just not as traditionally rigorous. It's a classical style of education. So it focuses on traditional things, that things like what our founders of the United States would have learned when they were growing up.
In Minnesota, do you have a big homeschooling community there? Do you have co-ops and do you have the play groups? What kind of group activities do you guys have?
There are so many opportunities in Minnesota. It's unbelievable. Any kind of co-op you're looking for, you'd find. If you want secular, if you want religious, if you want specific religious, if you want play-based or education-based, It does not matter. You will find it. My kids participate in a lot of things, actually. I feel like it's actually harder to commit to certain times of school day because there's so many opportunities to do fun things. All of my daughters are very musical. They all participate in private music lessons, Ninjas United, which is a ninja warrior course. And then we're involved with our church. Oh, my kids also participate. My older kids participate in sports at the local high school. I like that aspect of participation in the local community because it allows them to make friendships with people that live in our community, but also it allows us to teach them what we want them to learn.
Yeah, in New York, we're not allowed to do school sports, actually.
Oh, that's really unfortunate.
I know. This state's really great. Was there anything else that you wanted to make sure that we discussed? Anything that you might think to yourself, oh man, I wanted to say that.
I would say that as a homeschooling parent, I think that one of the most important core beliefs is that every single child is born with an innate brilliance within them. And that as an educator, you have the privilege of unlocking that brilliance and enhancing their ability to learn. If you take that role as their educator, you're going to see them grow. You're going to see them thrive in ways that you maybe didn't even dream were possible.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for talking with us today. This has been really eye-opening. And anything that we discussed, I will make sure that we have a link in our show notes so that people can look for the curriculum that people can go and look at.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Homeschool How To. If you've enjoyed what you heard, please consider helping me out by sharing this episode with friends, or even better, share to your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. As a new podcast, we're really trying to get our episodes out there, and if you can help out with that, it would be so appreciated. Also, if you would like to be a guest on the show and tell us about your homeschooling experience, email me at thehomeschoolhowto@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at The Homeschool How To Podcast. Send me a direct message and I'll be sure to get back to you. All other episodes can be found at thehomeschoolhowto.com. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.